Hi, good vach. This is Yisachar Wartel, and we are now up to Parshat Naso. Hope everybody had an amazing Shabbos. I was actually able to stay up all night for the first time in a couple years. I was very happy about that. But either way, regardless of what you did, hopefully you had an amazing time. So before we begin, just want to mention this year is dedicated for Refuah Shleima for Devorah Bat Malka Bracha, and also Refuah Shleima for Tinoket Bat Devorah. So, may everybody be well, and hope everybody is doing well. So this week's parsha, as I mentioned, is Parshat Naso. And you think of Parshat Naso, you think of four, well, it depends if you've gone through it or not, but there are effectively four main pieces of this week's parsha. Effectively five. It starts off with the remainder of the Levite services and the different families. And then it also deals with the Sota, the wayward wife. And then we have the Nazir. Nazirite, I don't really know how to translate it well into English. And then we also have the priestly blessings. And then we also have the, of course, the tribal offerings, which, you know, we into next week's Parsha Be'alotcha, right? We have all the 12 tribal princes bringing their offering. So among those five, I will talk about one of those. So we will be talking about the episode of the Sota, the wayward wife. But, of course, there's so much to talk about. As part of the ritual performed in the Beit HaMikdash, which if you are doing Daf Yomi, they just finished Masechet Sota recently and, you know, sheds light on a lot of different interesting aspects of the process. But effectively, we're just going to right now stick with the pshat of the what's in the written Torah without getting into, you know, all of the different nuances and items that the oral law and derivatives teach us. So as part of the rituals performed, if she was guilty, right, her husband warned her to not seclude herself with a certain individual, she did, and then, you know, actually committed relations, therefore truly committed adultery, then the curse would be that her thigh would collapse and her belly would swell. Again, there's, you know, good things that'll happen if she wasn't guilty, but assuming she was guilty, that's the punishment. Now, the word the Torah uses for swell is for the root tzav, tzadivet, not tzadivah, which means the command. But tzadivet, which means the swell, and it says, your thigh will collapse and your belly will swell. This takes on two other conjugational forms in this an adjacent pesukim, but what's interesting is the actual root of tzadibet. Now, this root strangely appears again towards the end of the parsha, but in an extremely different context. When introducing the offerings of the Nisim, the tribal princes, where the Torah writes, Vayivuot karba anam ha'ofnei Hashem shesh eglot tzav u'shnei asar bakar egla al-shnei ha'nisim v'shro echad. And they brought their offerings before Hashem in six covered wagons, that's Eglot Tzav, and 12 cattle, a wagon for two princes, and one ox to lead it. Now, the term for covered wagon is Eglot Tzav. So, Tzav in this case means covered. So, what's the connection between this usage and the previous usage of the Tzadibet root? Now, one is fairly knowledgeable in Hebrew will be quick to realize that this word of Tzav also actually means turtle, although there are some opinions that it means toad. But it does seem to be something with some sort of covering or shell. And that's the reason that's often attributed to be a turtle is because the turtle is covered with the shell that surrounds it. Therefore, it makes sense why the term can be then used for a covered wagon, but why with the concept of swelling? Well, when something, especially as a stomach swells, it then becomes round and enlarged, covering the entire area. So that actually is kind of a similar shape. However, this raises a different question, namely, it's understandable within the specific uses why each term of tzav, tzadibet, is used. But is there actually a connection between the episode of Sota and the offering of the tribal princess in the Sian? In other words, the fact that this term, which is not very common throughout the Torah, it's used very few times, appears in two different contexts within the same parsha, seemingly cannot be coincidence. So let's first take a look at why the stomach or belly is affected. It might be more logical to say that her rechem, her womb, should swell rather than her beten, which means her belly, which although it contains the whole general area, can also specifically refer to the stomach. She sinned in an appropriate and treacherous act of relations, so the womb would at first be a more appropriate place for punishment. However, the womb is sacred. The Sota did not presumably commit adultery because she wanted to bear a child with this person or become a mother with this person, but rather she did so out of desire or an appetite. Thus, the punishment is fitting, because since her appetite, so to speak, grew larger than it should have been, which should have only been for her husband, it therefore swelled, her stomach swells, to larger to include what she did with another man. However, sometimes a growing appetite, of course, can be a good thing, right? We can have appetite for mitzvot, but we can also see by the donations of the Mishkan the Jewish people gave far more than necessary, and Hashem had to tell them to stop, right? Like, you have more than enough, right? We just kept giving and giving. We donated everything we had, pretty much, for the temple purposes, especially the women. Now, the Nesi'im, the tribal princes, brought abundant sacrifices and gifts to Kadosh Baruch Hu, although they were the same. But the wagons were so overflowing that they needed to be covered. So even though each one was careful, you know, for the sake of, you know, jealousy, stinginess, whatever you want to call it, to make sure that every single one brought the exact same thing, nevertheless, they each brought a tremendous amount of material, and they were so overflowing that they needed to be covered. If one has an appetite for generosity or devotion, this can be a very meritorious thing. Of course, you obviously have to be careful not to give more than your means allow. It's a different story. But within your means, right, that's a very meritorious thing to give a little bit more than, let's say, you know, an even load full, right? So if you can give a little bit more, swell your chesed a little bit, right? If one is never satisfied and always wants to strive to help others, he or she can swell with pride and purpose at the opportunity to contribute to society and our brethren. Now, this is the purpose of a Jew. Always give and assist. And we emulate the traits of chesed in Hashem, right? And we sometimes go beyond the basic measure in order to do what is right or as defined by the Torah. Again, there's always some fine lines, and you have to, you know, if you're a husband, always ask your wife. But, you know, but if you're, even if you're a wife, ask your husband. But we should not stick our heads out in our shell like the turtle, but rather use our metaphorical shell according to our means to shelter and assist others, right? If we have a home, we invite other people into it. If we have a protection in the realm of, like, extra cash or extra funds or extra material, we can donate that or share that with other people. Don't hide, right? Don't be Chas V'Shalom, a hermit, you know, or just be like, you know, Scrooge, right? It's a weird reference, but, you know, just like, don't like hoard all the money for yourself. The purpose, Hashem gave you these gifts that you have, you know, assuming you have extra, or whatever you have extra, you may have extra time, you may have extra money, you may have extra creativity, whatever it might be that you have extra of. It might not even be something material. It might be an extra sense, right, to determine when people are unhappy, right? This is what Hashem is telling us, that anytime we have the ability of something that can grow larger, we want to use that, and we want to nurture that, and we want it to grow. Now, Sota leads into the concept of Nazir, which is a Nazirite, and there's a very big debate in the Gemara as to whether or not that's a good thing because you're refraining from something. Now, obviously, there's a very fine line in terms of refraining and giving. We're not meant to be, you know, ascetic, but obviously it's for a certain purpose. So that's a whole other topic in its own right. But we need to make sure that if we are very, very generous, that we do have some ability to curb it. Because it goes up, right? When it swells, it goes up and outwards, but it also comes back down again, right? We have to make sure that when we are giving and we want to give and we want to do chesed and we want to help people and we want to be out there and, you know, affecting other people positively, but we also need to come down and make sure that our own world is solid as well, right? And that we are on the planes of other people and we're not like going completely, you know, out of our means and out of our limits. So we want to try and do everything in stride and everything in balance, but of course we want to definitely go just at least a little bit beyond the flat measure to swell a little bit, and then hopefully we can swell with pride at some of the mitzvahs we've done and some of the amazing chesed that we've done that can hopefully make other people swell with happiness and gratitude for the help that they've received. Wishing you all a Shabbat Shalom.